It's that time again. I'm Darren Harper, and I welcome you to the Jazz Matters podcast. We've made it to episode 4, and we are genuinely overwhelmed by the response that we've had from you. The feedback and the messages we've received really have been so lovely. Jazz Matters sets out to make jazz more accessible and to bring people together, and on a small scale, we already seem to be doing that, which really is wonderful. Episodes of the podcast have now been heard in 18 different countries around the world, so please do get in touch and let us know where you're listening in from. In our last episode, we heard all about the wonderful Adrian Cox and his Profoundly Blue tour. Since the episode went out, I managed to catch the tour for the second time. This time out, it was at the Pizza Express Live in Maidstone, a venue I would recommend to anyone. Some new tunes have been added since the last time I saw them last year, but the night was as electric as ever. The band was absolutely swinging from start to finish, and I highly recommend catching their tour across the UK before the end of March. A big thank you as well to Pixie and the Gypsies, who had me as their guest at their first 2019 show at the Spice of Life in Soho. A brilliant night with wonderful hosts, and I was very excited to hear a brand new track from them, which I will happily share with you just as soon as they get themselves back into a recording studio. A new name to me was their support act at the Spice of Life, an exceptionally talented young lady by the name of Linos Emmanuel. I would highly recommend finding her on social media and staying up to date on her impending EP. But on to episode 4, and this time out we speak to one of the true statesmen of the UK jazz scene, the one and only Digby Fairweather, about his new project, the Jazz Centre UK. Now, I have the privilege of living just a few miles from the centre, but for those of you further afield, and in some cases much further, I really feel it is important to shine a light on this little gem and spread the word as far as we can. But before we do, as always, let's enjoy some music. This time from the man himself. Digby Fairweather and his half dozen have been producing music for over 20 years, and even in the face of stiff competition from the much coveted new generation of UK jazz, they earned themselves a nomination at the 2018 British Jazz Awards. So this is Digby and his half dozen with their rendition of Things Ain't What They Used to Be. We'll be right back. 1987, Digby Fairweather, the multi-award-winning jazz musician, radio broadcaster and author, founded the National Jazz Archive, which has become a British institution and national research centre. Over many years, the centre began to grow in size and receive more significant funding, and eventually Digby decided to take a step back from the operational running of the centre and instead took a role of founder and lifelong patron. In 2012, the NJA decided it was no longer able to accommodate the collection of one of its founder members, Graham Langley. Unable to face the thought of this wonderful and important part of jazz history just ending up thrown away, Digby came up with a plan.
I came to some friends of mine at Southend Borough Council and said, could we find a room to stock all the stuff which cannot go any longer at the NJA? And they said very keenly, oh, yes, we can. And on top of that, we'll take the NJA. And I said, no, we won't. Because by that time, the National Jazz Archive had a national presence of getting on for 30 years. But it was agreed that we would have one room in the back of the old Beecroft Art Gallery where the stocks would be stored.
It wasn't long before things started to grow in size, and once again, it was almost as a result of an unintentional turn of events. Just 6 months after taking Graham Langley's collection to Southend-on-Sea, Digby was contacted by Stephen Littleton, the son of one of the greatest communicators of British jazz, Humphrey Littleton, who sadly passed away in 2008. Stephen explained that he was downsizing and as a result, he had no option but to throw out many of his father's possessions, including his original writing desk at which he wrote most of his scripts, his treasured instruments and about 80 years of private correspondence. Digby simply could not see this being thrown out, and expecting the National Jazz Archive to be delighted to receive the fruits of his efforts, he went and collected it all from Stephen. However, on contacting the NJA, he was somewhat taken aback by their response.
And to my amazement, they said, oh no, we can't have that. Our collection policy, Digby, now doesn't allow for the collection of what we call objects. And I said, well, that sounds very forbidding. I'd probably call them artifacts, actually. So what do you want me to do? Do you want me to throw it out, or do you want me to take it back to Stephen and say, put it in the skip? But of course, we didn't do that. I kept it here.
It was only about 3 months later that Digby was contacted by another well-intentioned friend who advised him that the first piano of Sir John Dankworth, the legendary saxophonist, composer, bandleader and husband of Dame Cleo Lane, was for sale on eBay. What's more, it was about to sell for £5. Digby jumped at the chance to purchase it and paid for it to be transported to Southend-on-Sea and given the tender loving care that it needed. Once again, he then reached out to the National Jazz Archive, and it was probably then that Digby realised the path his future was taking. The NJA had some very clear words for him.
You know perfectly well, Digby, that that's not what we do. Now, why are you being so difficult? So then commenced some pretty awkward discussions between the chairman and myself. And after a good deal of consultation, it was decided that we would part with NJA and set up a separate charity.
The charitable incorporated organisation that was registered in 2017 was the Jazz Centre UK. Originally located in a small room in the basement of a disused library, the building is now the Beecroft Art Gallery, and the Jazz Centre occupies the entire 3,000 square foot basement, spread over three separate rooms. Since then, Digby and a team of dedicated volunteers have started to turn a cramped room filled with random jazz artefacts into a living and breathing cultural centre for jazz. The Jazz Centre offers live jazz 3 weekends out of 4, a cinema room with an incredible selection of jazz films and documentaries, talks, lectures and beautiful displays of historically important jazz artefacts, and has a new membership scheme about to launch. Having experienced it for myself, it really is an immersive jazz experience where every visitor can learn so much, not just from the things on display, but from the expertise and the passion of the people there. Speaking to Digby, it is clear that he's under no illusion. The Jazz Centre UK is still in its infancy. In terms of footfall, audience, the information of live jazz that it offers, it is still aiming itself primarily on the southeast of England. But his wry smile tells me that he's not quite done yet. The Jazz Centre is sure to expand further and I believe could very well become a national centre for UK jazz. But if that is to be the case, apart from being a Southend lad himself, what made Digby so sure that Southend would be a feasible place for a centre with national or even international appeal?
I had to think about that a bit. But what I did know was that you would never, ever be able to afford the rates in London for a thing like this. The other thing is that we have a flourishing airport, so when we get round to bringing Americans in, it'll be easy. And also, the other thing is Crossrail. And Crossrail at the moment are talking about a direct connection between Tottenham Court Road in the West End and Shenfield. A Londoner could be at the Jazz Centre UK within 40 minutes. And years and years ago, when I was much younger, there was an awful lot of talk about decentralisation. And when my wife Gwen and I were planning this idea, we went down to places like the Turner Gallery in Margate. And actually, the Turner Gallery has transformed Margate. Nowadays, it's got all the old buildings like the Dreamland Ballroom where I used to play are now totally refurbished. So my hope is that one day, the Jazz Centre UK can do the same for Southend.
I was interested to hear from Digby about where he sees the Jazz Centre's space in UK jazz. It's clear that he's very proud of his history with the National Jazz Archive, but the Jazz Centre UK is offering something very different. It's a living, breathing venue where people can go not only to learn about jazz, but to enjoy feeling part of it. It really has the makings of a social centre with a small cafe and a performance area, which is only just going to get bigger and busier with time. To Digby, it's clear that the NJA still has a very important role to play, but that he is offering something very different, if equally beneficial.
I suppose if somebody came into me and said, I'm writing a long book about, say, Charlie Parker, I would say, off you go to the NJA, because although we have a good library, it is basically a basic library. And for people who want in-depth research, the NJA is our sister ship, and it's the place I would tell people to go. But for people who might be starting out on jazz, as I did when I was, 11 or 12, I would go into Southend Library, which had five or six books on jazz, the basic text, and I'd devour them. And we certainly have all of those here. So I think it's quite a positive place for people to come to discover the music in their own time, to get to know about it, to kind of get debriefed about the way people think about jazz. They think of it as a very obscure, abstruse art form all too often. And I think we both agree that most people are happiest if there's a melody and a rhythm and maybe a nice set of chord changes. So for me, it's a business partly of getting the mystery of the image of jazz blown out of the window. If somebody comes down from the art gallery upstairs and says, I don't know much about jazz, well, we say, let's show you around. Is there somebody you'd like to hear? And hopefully we bring them slowly, slowly, slowly into the jazz circle.
You're listening to the Jazz Matters podcast at jazzmatters.net.
This wonderful little home of jazz in the southeast of England certainly has big plans, but more notably, has already attracted the attention of some big names. Digby himself has a long and distinguished career in music and broadcasting, and was undoubtedly able to call on some old friends. But it's quite clear that the Jazz Centre is not short of support, both locally and across the UK. I spoke to Digby about how he managed to drum up that initial support and how he's using that to drive the project forward.
My first real supporter in the patron area was Van Morrison. I made a couple of records with Van years ago, And when I wrote to him, he said, it's a terrific idea and we should do it, which letter I have in a frame on the wall, by the way. And other people like Sir Michael Parkinson, Dame Cleo Lane, Charlie Watts, all came on board as patrons. And a lot of them did a great deal to help us. Parky, I call him Sir Michael, I don't like Parky, did a free presentation of his one-man show for us. We had a lot of support from our patrons. And also, wonderfully, from my trustees, of course, who are people that I completely trust, no pun intended. They're old friends mostly, and they give me a lot of financial support and a great deal of inspiration. And my volunteers, of whom I have over 25, are also tremendous people. And it did take a little while, I think, for Southend Borough Council to get used to us. I think when all these crazy musicians started flooding through the door, you know, with all these big ideas, they thought, oops, this is disturbing the peaceful tenure of our ways, you know. But once they got used to us, we got very friendly. And by the time we had our grand relaunch in October last year, they were pretty much all on our side.
Finally, I spoke to Digby about his long-term plans for the centre and what he sees it offering in years to come. What came out of this was wonderful. Digby had spoken with such passion and enthusiasm about the Jazz Centre UK, but something about him changed when he started to speak about the history and resilience of jazz as an art form. He spoke with the passion of a proud father, expressing his views on what makes jazz so hardy and why it not only still holds a place in the world that has seen so many musical revolutions over the years, but why it continues to prosper and how it has such an exciting future.
Our purpose is to get out into the community and dissolve this slightly misty vision that people have of jazz, get them in, and then they can find out for themselves what fun it is, how exciting it is, how artistically involving it is, and really that it's not some kind of difficult art form pilloried with some categories. You don't have to do that. You can come in and listen to Louis Armstrong or Tony Bennett or whoever, and all of a sudden you like jazz. Our long-term ambition is a big one. We've made a good start, and we call ourselves the Jazz Centre UK, but by no means are we that. We need more space. We need to expand our budgets for performance. We need to expand our activities. We need more storage for the aspect of our obligations that deals with heritage, collections and such. And we need all kinds of extra space for music workshops, for all the musical activities that I want to happen here, as well as around the community. Of course, the nature of it will have to change somewhat as the definition of jazz changes. But nonetheless, jazz is the most hardy and self-surviving art form that I know of, because it's a creative, self-expressive art form. And anybody who wishes to create or express themselves via improvised music is going to become a jazz musician. That's why it survived the Beatles. When the Beatles came along, I thought we might have had it. But 50 or 60 years on, the Beatles have taken their place in history. But every year, at least three colleges in London, the Royal Academy, Trinity College, Guildhall, produce dozens of fully qualified jazz musicians after a 3 or 4 year degree course. So it is the most flourishing art form, even if it's an underground art form currently in this country. What we have to do is fetch it up from the underground and bring it back into the general cognizance of the general public. And when we do that, then we'll have done our job.
final track of the episode there came again from Digby Fairweather himself, from the 1991 album A Portrait of Digby Fairweather, that was one of my personal favourites, Going Out Steppin'. Once again, we reach the end of our time together. My thanks go out to Digby Fairweather and his wonderful team of volunteers at the Jazz Centre UK for their hard work in creating such a wonderful jazz hub in my corner of the world. The Jazz Centre UK is situated in the heart of Southend-on-Sea in Essex, right next to Southend Victoria train station, with direct links to Shenfield, Stratford and London Liverpool Street in the heart of the City of London. For those of you who are too far away, why not just show them some love and support online? You can find them across social media platforms by searching The Jazz Centre UK. If you want to go one step further and get involved in volunteering at the centre, you can contact them by using the links in the podcast information. Digby himself has a wealth of brilliant music available online, and if you keep your ear to the ground, you can still catch him playing at live events across the country. Next time out on the Jazz Matters podcast, we'll be hearing all about one of my favourite musicians of the moment, the brilliant James Brandon Lewis. James's brand new album, An Unruly Manifesto, has been making waves since its release at the start of February, and I'll be bringing you his thoughts on that, his career, and the wider jazz scene. If you want to be the first to hear about our upcoming episodes, you can sign up to our mailing list at jazzmatters.net, where you can also find out how you can support us in achieving our goal of bringing great jazz to even more people. If you're enjoying the podcast, please do let us know. You can contact us via the website or across our social media. We really want to hear what you think of the show and who you'd love to hear us talking to. But for now, I thank you once again for your support, and until next time, bid you farewell.